Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door.
The prodigal son is back.
Great. Good to see you, Dave.
Just in the nick of time, David Cabrera walks in, ready to save the show.
So, hey, welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of the film, through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema.
What was that song we were listening to when we walked in?
Oh, come on, man. It's CCR. Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Cool track.
Cool track from 1997.
Are they on Spotify?
They should be.
Okay, cool. You know, some new bands, they just put out cassettes, so I can figure it out.
I think they've got more than a 45 out there.
Hey, David, you made it.
So
hey.
You're not allowed to smoke in the studio, guys.
Oh.
Sorry.
Somebody should have told these guys.
Yeah. All right. Later this week is April 20th, or 420, so in celebration. We're going to talk about stoner movies, and we have a very special guest this week. You may know him from his far more popular radio show and podcasts and books and whatnot, all bongs considered. But we have the host here, Bong Boylan.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks a lot for being
here.
Hey,
Bong.
How's it going? It's so great to be here. First time live on the show. I gave you guys a recorded thing last time, but now I'm in studio.
Yeah, Bong. That's awesome. Thanks for being here.
I also wanted to tell you, you're talking about Creedence Clearwater Revival. You can call him CCR, or you could just call him Creedence.
Or you can just call him Creedence. Right?
Yeah.
They are a band that can go by several names.
Yeah, it's true.
When you have that many words, you know, there's so many different options.
Yeah, exactly.
How long do you think we can talk about this?
Let's just do a Creedence episode.
They are a band, too, that I thought in my entire childhood, just because they have some of these kind of swampy full moon type songs.
Sure.
I thought they were like a deep south, and they have that kind of sound, like a deep south. They're a Southern California band.
They're actually just posers.
Yeah. But but it took me forever to realize, oh, these guys are like a Southern California band.
I think maybe Middle California, something not the south of anything.
Yeah, definitely not from the south.
All right. We have a cinema. What did we show last week? David? Let's talk about last week.
Yeah. So last week, Tuesday, we showed a double feature of two movies. One called Down and Out in America.
And it was a bummer?
It was a bummer. But it was interesting. It definitely like showed rural America getting fucked over by corporations, but they seemed to know it, and that was...
That's pretty cool.
At least heartening.
Yeah, that was cool. At least heartening that, you know... Anyways,
I like our theme of like depressing Tuesdays. I'm seeing that.
Yeah,
go on.
Depressing farm Tuesdays
at Sun Cinema.
Yeah, yeah. And then, Handsworth songs was amazing. That was it's a short doc. It's an hour long. It's about London. It's about riots. And it's by I believe it's called the Black Film Collective, Film and Audio Collective. But the soundscape in that was amazing. The music was really cool. A lot of just like experimental stuff going on. And also it was, you know, kind of depressing as well.
Prince. That's fun. You dressed up.
I dressed up as Prince.
He squirted stuff out of his guitar.
Yeah. So I was not going to make it. And I sent Ryan the highlights of what I was going to talk about for last week. And that was one of them. It was,
It's fine.
He was doing a lot of gyrating.
Weird.
Yeah.
How was the crowd?
There was about five people. Oh, and they had like Prince hoodies, like Prince concert hoodies, and they were like the dedicated ones.
We were afraid we weren't going to get a copy of the concert, so we like didn't hype it, and we made an event like 2 days before because we were like,
But the last one was just
it was too many people, which was great.
Yeah, which was better than this one.
How was Morning Patrol? Was it really like a boring Blade Runner?
It kind of was. Yeah, yeah. It was an elegiac Blade Runner. It was very nice to look
that
at.
That word sounds boring.
It was very, like, you know, sort of meditative, if you will.
Following right behind it was...
was Blade Runner, which was also... which was a faster version of Morning Patrol.
Of Morning Patrol.
Yeah.
Wall Street?
Wall Street
on Saturday? People get hammered?
People got pretty drunk. There was some monsters.
Were there day traders there? Out at night?
I wonder.
Anybody suited up, cufflinks on the whole bit?
No.
No.
There was someone that was just like, I could tell from the beginning they were annoying. And they were, you know, laughing through the whole thing. And like even laughing at the part where Martin Sheen is dying.
Yeah,
you know
my hatred of a bad cinema goer.
So there was a woman at the bar actually who was like, just like yelled out. She's like, it's not funny. And I was like, all right, my team, get them.
Exactly.
Get them. Then Sunday was my brother's wedding, which is Charles Burnett.
Charles Burnett.
Killer of Sheep. I want to say I might have liked this one more.
Oh, wow.
It's in color. It's a good timepiece from like Watts in like the early 80s. It's, you know, he's doing that whole thing with like amateur actors.
Right.
So it's a little jilted, but... this one was really funny, and also a little depressing, but the main takeaway that that I had, there was this really cool older couple that was there too, and we were all talking about after how the main character looks a lot like Dave Chappelle.
Oh, really?
Even in the promo.
Yeah, and his mannerisms, that sort of like where he's like taking it in, I'm not going to say what I'm thinking, but I'm taking it in. He does the same mannerisms. It's very interesting. So that's
cool.
That's an official review of that movie.
The guy looks like Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
What have we got this week?
God's Country tonight. It's a Louis Malle doc about Minnesota, 1985. 1985. He was in Minnesota in the late 70s.
So, yeah,
then he goes back and he re-interviews the same people.
Right.
So another look at rural America in the U.S. Panel story is a Vera Chitlova movie, the director of Daisies, Fruits of Paradise, or Fruits in Paradise. Mm-hmm. Czech director, female. This one is about a state-run like housing
complex
and the problems that lie there within. Parting Glances is a movie. It's a young Steve Buscemi movie.
Right.
Is it Buscemi or Buscemi?
It's Buscemi.
It's Buscemi.
Buscemi. It's like bruschetta.
Come at me.
Our friend Dawn said that she met Steve Buscemi, and it's definitely Buscemi. And she got sushi with him.
He narrates the Eastern State Penitentiary tour in Philadelphia, and he says Buscemi. So,
well, then you got to go with that.
From the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
All right. Then we get the exciting ones. We got a really cool weekend. We got Running Man.
Running Man.
You just watched it recently, Jason?
Yeah, I just watched it over this past weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun at the cinema. I mean, just the opening credits and everything. It's hilarious. It is... like terribly dated in a way, and then
terribly relevant.
Terribly relevant in a lot of ways as well. And it just like all of those 80s vehicles for those guys, but specifically Schwarzenegger, probably more than anybody. I mean, it was just like I was watching it, you know, with my wife, and she was like, he's not even a human being. Like
he's a champ.
Does not look like a human. He's so huge. I mean, just muscles on muscles. This guy is insane. And you can just see, like, he's got, like, an American name, you know, very standard you know, Richard Brickman or something like that. And like they make no excuse for any of his speech, you know, or it's just, it was, I can see this being a little comical, for sure.
Cool.
During the screening.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where you're kind of like, it's taking itself very seriously, but it's going to be a good time to watch.
It's
with a,
so
with
ridiculous.
A group of people.
Nice. Yeah. See, oh, and then after that, we're going to do, because that is 420, we're just going to do a late night screening of some, like, some anti-marijuana PSAs.
Oh, thank God.
And
Reefer Madness kind of.
Yeah. Arena. So we'll show some of those and some Stoner Classics. We'll just have them on all night. So have kind of like a late night Reefer Madness. Nice. And then Saturday, we got They Live. If David wasn't going to come, I was just going to play the Zizek clip of him talking about They Live. But I think we can skip it. And just everyone should know that it's a great movie and they should see it. And now we can move on to a little interview with our guest. Thanks for bearing with us, Bong.
Hey, no problem, no problem.
So Bong, for those of the listeners who aren't familiar, which I don't know who that would be.
Yeah, that would shock me.
But explain all Bongs considered, how you've started this kind of a cultural empire about paraphernalia and marijuana use.
Well, you know, and it's so funny to talk about it now that things have gotten so far along, and that there's guys like you that have a podcast now, but back in 2001, I mean, and the internet was just, you know, in elementary school, and so, well, they had it in other schools too, but no, I meant how old the internet was. It was just in elementary school.
Oh.
And they, so we started thinking like, okay, we, you know, we've done radio for so long, what if we did it on the internet?
Wow.
And you could say we pioneered the Bongcast. So we've been doing our Bongcast, All Bongs Considered, since about 2001. At first, we had 2-3 people looking at it, you know, and then I started doing, you know, tiny seshes. Uh-huh. And, you know, the tiny seshes we've been putting out there. So that's when we have somebody that's in town.
You brought in Cypress Hill to review their bongs, and that was great. The tiny sesh.
Yeah, we've been trying to recreate the green room atmosphere, but, you know, like at my, you know, in my sesh palace, you know.
Okay.
So.
And that was like 2001 that the podcast started, and it took off quite quickly, kind of similar to the Sun Cinema podcast. It took off pretty quick. And then in 2003, you came out with the first big book about All Bongs Considered, This Bong Saved My Life.
Sure, yeah.
And I remember when I first got this this book, I read the thing cover to cover in a single sitting. I just couldn't put it down. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's great. That's a great compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's great to be interviewing. I'm kind of blushing.
Oh, wow.
having you in here, Bong
just,
boiling.
You should just grip it and rip it, man. Like, you know, that's sort of our philosophy over at the Tiny
Sesh. Weeping, actually.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the party game in the book, I think, in the later chapter. Where this bong saved my life. And you said you would have people at your dinner parties and whatnot go around in circles and talk
munchie
about...
Munchie sesh.
Yeah, munchie sesh. Yeah. And you would talk about the bongs that saved their life or the weed experience that, that was changed their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, I got it because I had been at a dinner with John Hodgman, and he had been going around for a long time asking people if they'd rather be invisible or fly. And I was like, well, I need my own dinner party conversation to start. And so I was like, okay, what bong saved your life? You know what I mean? I feel like everybody's got one, you know? And so I mean, what do you guys, could I put it to you guys? Like, what do you have one?
I was thinking we could spin off of this. And since we're a movie podcast, we can, pick the scenes in movies, the getting high scenes, the bong scenes.
That's great.
And last time we had your clip where you reviewed the bongs in Clueless, which was really fun. But yeah, let's all go through some like pot scenes and pot movies. I know there's all the Cheech and Chong movies. Those kind of, I guess, got it lit. Started the movement. And we had the anti-pot movies like Reefer Madness back in the day and all those, Watch Out for Drugs, They'll Kill You PSAs.
Sure.
Real quick, is it true that you don't actually smoke?
What? Cigarettes? No, I've never.
Or marijuana.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've never gotten high. You know what I mean? Like, I've always been more of, like, you know, sort of a, you know, bong kind of guy. You know, bongs, chillums, Gandalf pipes. I've got a huge collection of glassware, woodware, you know, homemade pieces, all kinds of stuff.
Is it more the aesthetic of it for you?
Love or? The aesthetic. I love the engineering. I love, you know, the functionality, ergonomics, all of that stuff. Yeah. That's so funny that you guys thought I, like, got high. That's really funny.
Ah, okay. Okay, let's go around. Let's pick some favorite getting high scenes in movies. Who wants to start?
I think just something I saw very, very recently, but it was one of those that was just like one of the great character intros in cinema that I've seen in a long time, and it's the intro of Danny McBride playing Danny McBride in This Is the End, the Seth Rogen film.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember this scene? It opens just on smoke rings coming out of a bathtub, out of a clawfoot tub, and you ultimately get the glimpse of Danny McBride dancing around in this huge montage sequence and going downstairs.
He's got some killer songs.
So
on, right?
Yeah. And we'll talk about the movie a little bit later, maybe. But it's just set to this great, you know, intro music. And it spends about a good 30, 45 seconds introing Danny McBride as he's starting to prepare what is ultimately the last of their rations.
Yeah. Just cooks up the biggest stoner feast in the world.
Yeah, the biggest breakfast you can imagine. So that was an easy one for me, I think.
Hey, Jack, what you got?
I think the best is High School High. I don't know if you guys remember that movie.
Oh,
with John
wow.
Lovitz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, do you have the clip?
I have a clip. This was maybe one of my favorite scenes in the movie. So we're at like a high school dance here. Very hip.
All right, peep this out, y'all. We're going to bump it up a little bit like this.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But this is...
Hey, listen. I have a record I want
you
to play.
This is the Ryan.
Don't you think the kids would enjoy a nice song with a melody?
What you got, Holmes?
It is a rare, one-of-a-kind original pressing.
Oh, yeah? All right, man, I'm going to put it on there for you, all right?
Man, shitty move bugging the DJ like that.
Hilarious.
Man, John Lovitz is so underrated.
These kids
start scratching
never...
it in a minute here?
Yeah,
there we go.
And then it's cool.
Oh, now it's lit.
Now it's lit.
That's actually kind of a cool jam. Like, if someone threw that on at a party, I'd be kind of into it.
It gets lost how funny that was in the 1995.
You know, like, also, you can't see John Lovitz's face right now looking horrified watching the record get scratched.
And I think for bong enthusiast teenagers, we saw that and we're like, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen, seeing this movie. It's very bad.
It's not a good movie.
No. But and then when Glenn Campbell died recently, I was like, does anyone even remember the High School High thing?
That's the only memorable part.
I think.
It was in every trailer, every commercial for the film. Great pick, man.
Mine isn't quite as a landmark. People don't know it as much. Mine's a little more of a cult classic. Ooh. But can you play the clip I put on there?
Got a deep cut?
If you see it on the...
Is it...
It's right next to... It's from this movie called Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
And it's Bilbo and Gandalf.
Here we go.
Oh, Tovey. The finest weed in the South Valley.
I weep every time I watch it. Even just listening to this right now. God, it's beautiful.
Good smoke rings going on.
I know. If you guys could see... Okay, I'll describe it to you. There's a ship that Gandalf blows through. Wait.
This will be a night to remember.
And then the fireworks go off and it panned to Bilbo's 111th birthday.
And that's,
obviously,
that song behind the scene was Concerning Bong Rips.
Yeah. Concerning Bong Rips. I also found like this High Times article. But David, what's yours? You got one? And I'm going to go to bongs.
I just, off the top of my head, the most memorable would be Friday. Just Craig Jones when he gets high with Smokey
I'm trying to remember this. Damn it.
They're sitting on the front porch, and he's just, like, struggling. Just can't do it. That's me when I get high, usually, socially, where it's like, all right.
Take a puff. Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Hey, like you got shit to do tomorrow. You don't have to go to work. Don't take a hit.
I got a drink.
Craig, let's stimulate your mind. You ain't got shit to do. Put it in your mouth.
Shut up.
How on fire was Chris Tucker in that movie?
Man, so good.
And how iconic is that clip?
Yeah.
And you know, you're talking about weeping earlier. I mean, I weep. Doesn't Friday take on, for a quote, weed movie, it just takes on so many, you know, like, real film, like, things. It's not just a weed, you know, but who didn't have their friends repeating that dialogue over and over?
Terribly
when somebody refused
movie.
To, and I never smoked, obviously, but when people repeated that dialogue to me again and again, and I was like, I'm here for the bongs, man. Just, you know. Man.
Well, actually, you know what? I've been watching a bunch of stoner movies lately because I wanted to get ready and find out what the best ones to show at Reefer Radness would be. And I just watched How High. It's streaming on HBO right now. It's Method Man and Redman.
I was just pulling this up.
Oh, great. This is when they're in the parking lot?
Yes.
Yes. They're about to take their THCs to get into university for, like, botany. In Redman, all his weed gets blown away by the air conditioner.
No!
But Method Man's got a big bag of weed that has his. Did his friend, like, get burned up into it or something?
I think so.
Somehow his buddy's soul got trapped in this bag of weed.
Got blunt?
Did they.
Got weed?
Yep.
Oh, that's good.
And then they share a joint, take their THCs together, and just get the highest scores ever. THCs are the college entrance exams.
I think their smart friend died,
yeah.
And they put his ashes into the soil of the plant, which then transmuted his intelligence to the weed. And then,
so what happens is his buddy, I'm going to go through it. His buddy is like, I'm going to help you take your THCs because... Method Man's so good, I forget his name, and it may be Jamal. Method Man's really good at growing weed, and not just, like, for people to get high. He's also giving it to, like, his elderly neighbors who have, like, joint pain. He's all about helping headaches, anti-nausea. It's actually pretty prophetic in this way.
It's a 17-year-old movie.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
See? And now to think, it's basically legal to smoke inside the recording studio at the Lion Hotel right now, which is crazy.
Well, I mean, for Bob...
So, bong.
I don't know. I could get a contact.
Well, okay, so his buddy's like, you know what? I'm going to help you take these THCs. I don't care if I get hit by a bus or if I fall out a window on fire. I'm going to help you. And then he catches on fire and falls out a window, gets hit by a bus, and dies. And then his ashes end up in this marijuana that gets them.
It sprinkles.
You know, then he comes to them metaphysically whenever they smoke it. So they end up going to Harvard. And it touches on so many good things throughout it. It's super misogynist and sucks in that regard. Mm. Like, as you can imagine, it kind of sucks in its politics regarding that.
Sure.
But how it looks at the Ivy League education through the lens of, like, a couple black guys from Staten Island is so funny. There's great politics on that throughout the whole movie. And there's great pot jokes.
Isn't there the scene where they sneak the brownies into into like some school event and the
in the school event they dump all the remaining weed with their buddy's ashes in it or with the his buddy had grown into they dump it all into the fire.
Oh, that's
like,
what happens right?
At like a fundraising dinner, and they make everybody see the vision of this guy, and he proves that Ben Franklin. Built a bong in 1776.
I love that.
And it's this historical find. It's really amazing movie.
Who made their career? Enough. I mean, like, really.
It made Wu-Tang's career.
Well, no. I mean, their net worth went through the roof after this.
Really?
Because then they were like the, you know, the TV stars. For any time there was a weed scene, like, this was the start of that.
I think they got a TV show also.
Method Man went on to play Cheese Wagstaff in The Wire. A bunch of film stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any bad weed scenes you guys can think of where they really paint weed in a scary light?
Oh, well.
You know what? Actually, you could play the clip, the Don't Tell Mom clip.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, bong. Is
There's actually a funny, the weed morality of this film is that he's a total loser, but then when he gets a haircut and cleans up and stops smoking weed, then he finally gets a girlfriend, and he ditches all his buds.
So this is Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Check it out, dude. Elvis, I'm going to take you higher.
They're getting the dog high here.
Best part of this too is they're blasting this music and he's like, I guess, playing an acoustic guitar alongside.
Right.
Kenny, could you turn the music down? Kenny!
What?
I have been working. I've had a very rough day. Could you turn the music down?
It's down, cave lady.
Oh, sick.
Kenny, why don't you save your last three brain cells? I mean, what if you need them?
I won't.
Oh, killer. Whoa.
That's right. You'll never need them because there's always going to be some jerk around stupid enough to take care of you.
What is your problem?
Yeah.
You couldn't even mow the lawn today. You're worthless. I am doing everything and I'm trying to get ready for a date. When are you going to start helping me, you lazy punk?
I love the raconteuring that happens between potheads.
PMS City Man.
Just man. Gross, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So this movie's taking on the that sort of old school devilish degenerate portrayal of the
stoner.
Yeah.
Or of marijuana in general.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. Do we have the Tasty Wave scene? From that's like a great hey Spicoli, why don't you get a job? And then he just, do we have that clip?
We're gonna cue that up in just a second here. Our partner streaming affiliate does have advertisements once in a while that we have to wait through, but hopefully they'll skip this for us. Okay, great. Here we go.
Yeah,
this is Spicoli showing up to Judge Nelson's job at the gas station or whatever.
You worked at All-American Burger.
7 months ago.
I got a brief story after this clip I can tell about Cameron
Crowe.
Let's
do a Sean Penn, short Penn discussion.
Yeah. It's, this scene is brilliant all the way through. There's a...
Why don't you get a job, Spicoli?
What for?
You need money.
All I need are some tasty waves, cool buzz, and I'm fine. Buzz, can I use your bathroom?
Yeah, go ahead. It's first door on the left.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of got a point there. You know, who needs a job? As long as he's got tasty waves, a little buzz, everything's fine.
This I don't mind. They play him as a dum-dum, but he's content. He's happy.
He's kind of figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us about Sean Penn.
I just, because we're on a podcast, I heard this on another podcast called Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and he's interviewing Cameron Crowe, and part of the conversation goes to Fast Times at Richmond High, which was booked by Cameron Crowe, later became the screenplay, and then Amy Heckerling of Clueless, later Clueless fame, but also... basically directed two generations of iconic,
high school
Los Angeles specific, movies. But they had, Cameron Crowe was talking about just the amazing performance of Sean Penn. And initially they had heard through a couple of agents that, hey, there's this kid, he's, real De Niro kind of guy, but he's very young. Very serious actor, but you guys should look at him. He's from Malibu. He's blonde hair, blue eye. Like, he fits the bill for what, the character is. So they bring in Sean Penn. And mind you, this is 1982. Like, Sean Penn is not Sean Penn yet. I think he had Bad Boys, but it hadn't even come out yet, which was the penitentiary, juvenile detention kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with the Will Smith, Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, most people are. But yeah. So he hadn't really done much of anything yet. And he shows up and he's basically, you know, telling Cameron Crowe and Heckerling and everybody, like, oh, yeah, no, I got it. I got the character down cold. I know this person. I can do this all day. And they're like, great, perfect. All right, let's read for it. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to read for it. I mean,
he's
mind you,
like, no.
Yeah, early 20s, 1982 Sean Penn. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to read for it. But if you hire me, I'll give you everything I got. It'll be great. You'll love
I'll nail it.
And he's like, he left. And we all sat around looking at each other for about 5 minutes. And we were like, well, I guess we're going to hire him. read a couple other people. And not having read Sean Penn at all, like, call him back and we're like, yeah, we're going to give you the role. Let's bring you in and do it.
Yeah, he's so, like, I know. Why'd you call?
He won't. And I mean, to hear Cameron Crowe talk about it, like, you could take this one way and be like, oh, he was being, you know, prima donna already and all this stuff. But he really wasn't, according to Cameron Crowe. He just had it down and he knew what he was going to do. And the first day of filming, he showed up and, like, blew everybody away with his opening scene.
That's so funny.
And Cameron Crowe came back and was like, you know, hey, you know, wanted to, like, read ahead. Now that we got you, you're in. You've already shot a scene. You know, hey, let's rehearse some of this other stuff. And yeah, no, I'm not going to rehearse any of that at all.
Well, the movie's kind of an ensemble cast, and he's not, like, the main character by any narrative or anything, but he's, like, the lead name in the movie. It's, like, starring Sean Penn.
Even
he's, like,
the
first name in the credits.
Him,
yeah,
you know, sitting in the desk on the cover or the marquee poster. I mean,
Well, Bong, since we have you in today, do you mind... Are you familiar with the piece that he smoked out of?
Yeah, 100%. So that, what Spicoli is sort of the one he, there's an iconic image of him sitting there kind of blankly staring off camera. He's got the Hawaiian shirt on.
Uh-huh.
And he's holding in his hand what we call a short and fatty stacker. It's got a bulbous bottom. It's got a short stem. I'm sorry, not the stem. It's got a short tube. It goes up about 3-4 inches. It's not a very tall piece, but it does have a big bulb, which allows you to get a lot in that chamber down there. You can take the water level up to make it a smaller bang, or you can have a big bang if you take it all the way down. It's a kind of a Big Bang Theory, and then you can the stem goes all the way to the back of the bulb, and it actually locks in there. So what you have is a screwable piece where you would load the bong if that was your thing to do. But for me, you know, it's a great piece to admire. Short, simple, to the point, with a lot of, you know, variability in how you want to bang it, rip it, and grip it. So there you go. That's the Spicoli piece, man. There.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us a great review of the Spicoli bong that he's smoking often in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which. You know, just like Clueless, I don't know, I've watched, like, both of these pretty recently. There's so much goddamn advice given to each other, but, like, fellow high school students are all giving each other advice all the damn time. It's like, well, let me tell you how it goes. Okay, if it's a guy, he's gonna like this.
Right, yeah, right.
To get
a
job, you gotta do this.
There is a lot of that.
Let's move ahead. Anyone seen anything recently? Anything new or old that they've seen that they?
I think you and I were having a conversation yesterday about one particular film that's done extremely well in the last couple of weeks that we were talking about called A Quiet Place, and this is the John Krasinski film just came out 2 weeks ago.
Bong, bear with us. Jump in however you want.
Oh, no, because I haven't seen it yet.
Well,
I know
you're a fan of The Office, so you basically have seen the fucking movie.
Oh, Jim is in it.
It's Jim from The Office.
Is Pam in it?
No.
No, but his wife...
anyone else from The Office?
No. His wife kind of looks like Pam.
Oh, okay.
It's like a hotter, more successful Pam.
All right, watch your mouth. But, okay, go on.
No, I thought this movie... My read on it, I know it's doing great.
Let's just set it up real quick.
Okay, I mean, go for it.
It's real simple.
I'll rip it down.
The film's called A Quiet Place, directed by John Krasinski. Everybody knows him, Jim Halpert from The Office, and, you know, the other films he's done. He's one of the most handsome guys around. married to or with Emily Blunt. Are they married or just together?
You know, I'm not sure.
But regardless, they're a couple, and she's in it as well. It's a story about a family forced to live in silence, like complete silence, while hiding from creatures that hunt by sound around their farm. This is looks like upstate New York, Pennsylvania, somewhere. Do they ever? I can't remember if they're very specific
about somewhere.
It. But it's farm country, and this family of five ultimately goes back to four and then again to five, is kind of trapped in this community being hunted at every turn by these very strange beasts. So that's the story.
My premise of it is that it's just a vanity project from Jim from The Office, and he got his wife to act in it. She's great. He's even pretty good in it. The acting's pretty good in the movie. I'll say that. The acting's pretty good, but the concept is like pseudo Stranger Things meets pseudo apocalypse. It has decent jump scares, but it's kind of an awful movie that it shows these people over a year after these creatures have started killing everyone, and there's nothing about them that says that they're survivors. There's no way these guys have existed. It seems that like very few people are still alive. Some people are holding out in silence, but you don't really get to see many of them.
Right.
And there's nothing about these guys that are convincingly survivors. I don't want to spoil anything, but I thought the movie was just had no point, was meandering all over, and I can't believe it's making money.
I'll take a couple of points here. One, I wanted to preface all of this with, I do love John Krasinski. He's charming as hell, great looking
guy.
He's
quite a good actor.
And he's a strong actor. Emily Blunt, the same.
Even better actress. She was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. No, and she's great in everything you see her in, from, you know, Devil Wears Prada to Sicario. So we love Emily Blunt. We love John Krasinski. And we are absolutely, Ryan, in the minority here, apparently.
I know. It's got a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's got a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got an 82 Metacritic score. It has an 8.1 on IMDb. And it's made $100 million in 2 weeks.
And I used my movie pass on it.
And you used
I could have seen something else yesterday.
So, yeah, I feel the same. I feel like there's just not a whole lot going on in the movie. I feel like it's kind of needlessly unrelenting toward the end, without a lot of... I'm all good on not having a ton of exposition and things like that in a film. I love that. I actually feel like it was maybe needed a little bit here.
Yeah.
Because you can't really, if you're trying to be rational at all, you can't really rationalize how these people are either alive or, by the end of the film, when you kind of see what has happened, how they haven't figured this out, or how the army, the National Guard, somebody hadn't figured
it's
this out before. That.
And it doesn't even do anything intellectually interesting with the idea of having to be silent. They don't make it like cool and existential or anything. It's just,
right.
Well, but let's move from that onto a better post-apocalyptic movie that we both watched yesterday. That was
Coming off of the Quiet Place conversation, we decided to revisit This Is the End, which is the...
Bong. Have you seen this one? This Is the End?
This Is the End. Great. Fantastic.
You know, held up, too.
Yeah.
We watched it yesterday. Real funny.
It does, and about...
Oh, yeah. What have we got, Jack?
True.
Just hit us.
Just hit you. Hold on.
Okay, we're going to hold on.
Yeah, this is a 2013 film by Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen.
We are not mad.
Clips here. I don't even know what this one is. Here we go.
Get into it. Oh my God, bud.
It's Gandalf the Grey's pipe.
Damn, shit.
Hello, little hobbits. Spark my ganja.
I'm weeping again.
I didn't even mention that I weep. I'm a sexual advocate.
And then, of course, the ending with the Backstreet.
Well, first, like, they gave this movie a bunch of funding, and they just let James Franco and Rogan just screw off with a bunch of money and a bunch of actor friends. But it's so funny.
It definitely has strong, strong moments.
It's, I mean, and there's that thing about the theater experience where no one's seen it.
Right.
You're with a bunch of people. And the laughter, that contagious laughter thing happening. And I just remember in a Borat first watch kind of way, just like, oh, like doubled over, holy shit, laughing.
Right.
And who can forget, God, I'm trying, you know, Danny McBride kind of steals the film.
Danny McBride, he does. That's why I mentioned him earlier on in his intro into the film. Like, they give him so much room to just kind of be Danny McBride on, you know.
And they hold off for like half a movie until it's like you're kind of like getting sick of the theme, and then he kicks in.
Right. Yeah, he definitely, the whole movie finds another gear once he comes on board. Of course, the mayhem is still yet to ensue, but the kind of setup, the final stage of the setup of bringing him in to be the wild card amongst these guys, because you could see how, even despite Jay, what is, help me out,
Baruchel,
yeah,
Jay Baruchel. What else is he in? Bong. Any idea?
Jay Baruchel.
He's like the other guy in it. He's in a bunch of stuff. He's always great.
He was in a movie.
He's the kid from Undeclared. Is he like the main kid in Undeclared?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he's also, he did a film called She's Out of Your League.
Yeah, like Knocked Up. Guy. I think. He's, in Knocked Up, he's like the Canadian one.
Exactly. Okay, yeah, Jay Baruchel.
Love him.
He's an Almost Famous too, huh?
He is an Almost Famous as well. Yeah.
Well, all right.
And Jay Baruchel, just one of those funny guys. But
we should have him on show.
You could see how, like this five, you know, these five guys: Jay Baruchel, James Franco. Who else do we have? Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen, and Craig Robinson. Mm-hmm. Like they would all find a way to be nice to each other and get around everything. And when Danny McBride shows up. He
Agent
just
of
like
chaos.
All bets are off. Yeah, Agent of Chaos is a perfect way to put it.
And his dressing, he has these. I mean, this is classic. His tone and like the way he's funny on camera, but his phrasings.
Oh yeah.
Just like there's a part I'll never because I laughed so hard just at the phrasing. But he goes, Jonah's like, there's been some fatalities, and he goes, you're an Oscar-nominated person. Right. like, you can do better than that.
Right.
Like, Oscar, that phrasing. And then he says, he's dressing down James Franco, and he goes, you got iPads coming out of the walls. I've been jerking off to magazines like a pilgrim.
Like a pilgrim.
Yeah, the movie is kind of like, it ends up being this kind of symposium of like different actors all taking a certain archetype set into this post-apocalyptic present where everything's going insane, and they're kind of all together and they're just bouncing off these different like mindsets off each other, and his just screws up everybody else's collection. Like they can't even stay on point because he's like, no, because what if you just don't give a shit about sharing
Agent
all the
chaos.
Things
yeah.
kicking everything apart, throwing a tantrum, who cares?
Yeah,
he just constantly is like breaking the fourth wall too, and like shitting on them for being their actual person. Each actor,
you know,
he kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. No, Michael Cera's in it. Rihanna's in it. So much damn better than A Quiet Place. Much more realistic post-apocalyptic scenario. Less derivative of Stranger Things.
Exactly.
Like I would say I Am Legend and This Is the End are like neck and neck for like good ways to deal with shit going down with the world ending. These are both like appropriate responses. Quiet Place, no.
So that what was our got? Review of Quiet Place.
Oh wait, before we leave, I want to do a real quick follow up on Rob Kane. We don't have a whole lot right now, but this is Forbes writer Rob Kane, our producer.
Oh wow, yeah.
Producer Jack brought this up that he's been writing up MoviePass a lot. We're wondering if he's involved. I've also looked up a lot of his other writing, and he specifically deals with China. He's talks about China and how
big budget releases come
out in China. I think there's something there. We don't have a lot right now. I just want to let listeners know we are following up on this, and we're going to see if there's something shady there. So
he does seem to support. He wants to save net neutrality. That's
we'll look into this. We're just going to look into him.
See.
This is the beginning of Kane's Gate. We're sending out some phishing emails, and maybe we'll get him on Forbes movie critic. Rob Kane.
We'd love to have you on the show, Rob.
Hey, and we hope you're clean, but if you're not, we're going to find out. All right, that's all we got. Okay, have fun on 420 this week, guys.
Yep, grip it and rip it.
Grip It, Rip It.
Any tips, Bong, for, you know, best ways to enjoy the holiday?
Well, I will say this. I was recently at South Bong Southwest, and once we got in to... They had some screenings down there. There's a film from 2006 that you could check out. It's called Evil Bong.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, it's just about a group of college stoners. They smoke from a sentient, malevolent bong, but they're unaware that it traps the toker in a surreal strip club with killer strippers and other strange creatures.
That's pretty sick.
There's cameos by Tommy Chong. There's All right. cameos by some woman who was in VH1's Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. And then there are subsequent sequels, Evil Bong 2, King Bong, and Evil Bong 3D, The Wrath of Bong.
That's pretty sick. Here, let's just, Bong, read us out with a bunch of of titles for weed. Weed, pot, marijuana.
You've got Too Long, 420, Ace, Airplane, Alfalfa, Alice B. Toker, Alligator Cigarette, Amnesia, Asparagus, AstroTurf, Aunt Mary, Baby, Bag of Bongs, Bong, Blaze, Blonde, Blue Sage, Blunt, Broccoli, Bud, Cabbage, Cannon, Catnip, Christmas Tree, Chronic, Climb, Crazy Weed, Daga, Dank, Don Juanita, Doobie, Dope, Endo, Fatty, Flower, Ganja, Good Giggles, Grass, Green, Green Goddess, Happy Cigarette, Hashish, Herb, Homegrown, Houdini, Jay, Jive, Keef, Kino, Kush, L Paper, Left Handed Cigarette, Loco Weed, Love Weed, Magic Dragon, Magic Smoke, Mary Jane, Maui Wowie, Mota, Moogle, Nixon, Palato, Prima, Plot, Rainy Day Woman, Reefer, Roach, Rope, Salad, Sensimilia, Skunk, Spliff, Stash, Sticky Icky, Stinkweed, Stogie, Tea, 13, Trees, Wacky Tobacky, and of course, Weed.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.